As I saw him, number 10, by Sampurnamma. To the poet, the Maharishi was an inspired poet. To the scholar, an endless ocean of knowledge. To the yogi, a supreme adept established in divine union. Everyone who approached him with humility and faith saw something of themselves reflected back with greater insight and clarity. It is no wonder that those uneducated but spiritually mature women who served him by cooking in the kitchen saw him as a flawless cook who taught the highest wisdom in simple kitchen chores. Sampurnamma diligently served Bhagavan in the kitchen for many years and still lives in Sri Ramanashramam today. She can be seen in the ashrama with cane in hand, walking slowly with short steps, bent and wearing a well-used white sari which is draped over the top of her head. When you speak to her, a beautiful smile lights up her face. In reminiscences taken from Ramana Smriti and a 1989 videotaped interview, Sampurnamma tells us her story. Bhagavan was born in the village next to ours, and my people know him from his earliest childhood. When he became a great saint with an ashrama at Tiruvannamalai, my relatives used to go there often, for they were quite devoted to him. I was busy with my household and was not interested in going with them. When my husband died, I was in despair and thought life was not worth living. My people were urging me to go to Ramanashramam to get some spiritual guidance from Bhagavan, but I was not in the mood to go anywhere. In 1932, my sister and her husband, Narayanan, were going to see Bhagavan, and I agreed to go with them. We found Bhagavan in a palm leaf hut built over his mother's samadhi, place of burial. Some devotees and visitors were with him, and all were having their morning coffee. Dandapani Swami introduced me to Bhagavan, saying, "This is Dr. Narayanan's wife's sister." As soon as I was introduced, Bhagavan gave a happy smile and said, "Varatum, varatum, she is welcome, she is welcome." When I was able to sit for long hours in Bhagavan's presence, my mind would just stop thinking and I would not notice the time passing. I was not taught to meditate and surely did not know how to stop the mind from thinking. It would happen quite by itself, by His grace. I would sit immersed in a strange state in which the mind would not have a single thought, and yet which would be completely clear. Those were days of deep and calm happiness. My devotion to Bhagavan took firm roots and never left me. I stayed for 20 days. When I was leaving, Bhagavan got a copy of Who Am I and gave it to me with his own hands. When I returned to my village, I was restless. I had all kinds of dreams. I would dream that a pious lady would come to take me to the ashrama, or that Bhagavan was inquiring after me and calling me. I longed to go again to Ramanashrama. My uncle was leaving for Arunachala, and I eagerly accepted his offer to take me with him. On my arrival, I was asked to help in the kitchen because the lady in charge of cooking had to leave for her home. I gladly agreed, for it gave me a chance to stay at the ashrama and to be near Bhagavan. In the beginning, I was not good at cooking. The way they cooked in the ashrama was different from ours, but Bhagavan was always by my side and gave me detailed instructions. His firm principle was that health depended on food and could be set right and kept well by a proper diet. He also believed that fine grinding and careful cooking would make any food easily digestible. So, we used to spend hours on grinding and stewing. He would sit in the middle of the kitchen, watching and offering suggestions. He paid very close attention to proper cooking. I would give him food to taste while it was cooking, to be sure that the seasoning was just right. He was always willing to leave the old hall to give advice in the kitchen. Amidst pots and pans, he was relaxed and free. He would teach us numberless ways of cooking grains, pulses, and vegetables, the staples of our South Indian diet. He would tell us stories from his childhood or about his mother, her ways, and how she cooked. He would tell me, "Your cooking reminds me of mother's cooking. No wonder our villages were so near." I think Bhagwan must have learned cooking from his mother, for if I made some dish very well, while tasting it, he would exclaim, "Ha, you have made this dish just like mother used to make it." And whenever my going home was mentioned, he would say, "Oh, our best lady cook wants to go away." In the kitchen, he was the master cook, aiming at perfection in taste and appearance. One would think that he liked good food and enjoyed a hearty meal. Not at all. At dinner time, he would mix up the little food he would allow to be put on his leaf, the sweet, the sour, and the savory, everything together, and gulp it down carelessly, as if he had no taste in his mouth. When we would tell him that it was not right to mix such nicely made up dishes, he would say, "Enough of multiplicity. Let us have some unity." When I think of it now, I can see clearly that he used the work in the kitchen as a background for spiritual training. He taught us to listen to every word of his and to carry it out faithfully. He taught us that work is love for others, that we never can work for ourselves. By his very presence, he taught us that we are always in the presence of God and that all work is his. He used cooking to teach us religion and philosophy. He would allow nothing to go to waste. Even a grain of rice or a mustard seed lying on the ground would be picked up, dusted carefully, taken to the kitchen, and put in its proper tin. I asked him why he gave himself so much trouble for a grain of rice. He said, "Yes, this is my way. Everything is in my care, and I let nothing to go to waste. In these matters, I am quite strict. Were I married, no woman could get on with me. She would run away." On some other day, he said, "This is the property of my father Arunachala. I had to preserve it and pass it on to his children. He would use for good things we would not even dream of as edible. Wild plants, bitter roots, and pungent leaves were turned under his guidance into delicious dishes. Once a feast was being prepared for his birthday. Devotees sent food in large quantities. Some sent rice, some sugar, some fruits. Someone sent a huge load of brinjals, and we ate brinjals day after day. The stacks alone made up a big heap, which was lying in a corner. Bhagwan asked us to cook them as a curry. I was stunned, for even cattle would refuse to eat such useless stacks. Bhagwan insisted that the stacks were edible, and we put them in a pot to boil along with dry peas. After 6 hours of boiling, they were as hard as ever. We were at a loss what to do, yet we did not dare to disturb Bhagavan. But he always knew when he was needed in the kitchen, and he would leave the hall even in the middle of a discussion. A casual visitor would think that his mind was all on cooking. In reality, his grace was on the cooks. As usual, he did not fail us, but appeared in the kitchen. "How is the curry getting on?" he asked. "Is it a curry we are cooking? We are boiling steel nails," I exclaimed, laughing. He stirred the stacks with the ladle and went away without saying anything. Soon after, we found them quite tender. The dish was simply delicious, and everybody was asking for a second helping. Bhagavan challenged the diners to guess what vegetables they were eating. Everybody praised the curry and the cook except Bhagavan. He swallowed the little he was served in one mouthful, like a medicine, and refused a second helping. I was very disappointed, for I had taken so much trouble to cook his stacks, and he would not even taste them properly. The next day, he was telling somebody, "Sampurnamma was distressed that I did not eat her wonderful curry. Can she not see that everyone who eats is myself? And what does it matter who eats the food? It is the cooking that matters, not the cook or the eater. A thing done well with love and devotion is its own reward. What happens to it later matters little, for it is out of our hands." It was clear that Bhagavan did not want me to treat him differently from others, and would set me right by refusing to touch the very thing I was so proud of and eager to serve. In the evening, before I would leave the ashrama for the town to sleep, he would ask me what there was to be cooked the next day. Then, arriving at daybreak the next morning, I would find everything ready. Vegetables peeled and cut, lentils soaked, spices ground, coconut scraped. As soon as he saw me in the kitchen, he would give detailed instructions about what should be cooked and how. He would then sit in the hall a while and then return to the kitchen to see how things were moving, taste them now and then, and go back to the hall to come again an hour or two later. It was so strange to see him so eager to cook and so unwilling to eat. In my coming and going, I sometimes had to walk in the dark along a jungle path skirting the hill, and I would feel afraid. Bhagavan noticed it once and said, "Why are you afraid? Am I not with you?" Bhagavan's brother, Chinnaswamy, the manager of the ashrama, asked me when I came at dusk, "How could you come all alone? Were you not afraid?" Bhagavan rebuked him, "Why are you surprised? Was she alone? Was he not with her all the time?" Once, Subbalakshmi Amma and myself decided to walk around the hill. We started very early, long before daybreak. We were quite afraid of the jungle. There were snakes and panthers and evildoers too. We soon saw a strange blue light in front of us. It was uncanny, and we thought it was a ghost, but it led us along the path, and soon we felt safe with it. It left us with daylight. Another time, we too were walking around the hill early in the morning and chattering about our homes and relatives. We noticed a man following us at a distance. We had to pass through a stretch of lonely forest, so we stopped to let him pass and go ahead. He too stopped. When we walked, he also walked. We got quite alarmed and started praying, "Oh Lord, oh Arunachala, only you can help us, only you can save us." The man said suddenly, "Yes, Arunachala is our only refuge. Keep your mind on him constantly.
It is His light that fills all space. Always have Him in your mind. We wondered who He was. Was He sent by Bhagavan to remind us that it is not proper to talk of worldly matters when going around the hill? Or was it Arunachala Himself in human disguise? We looked back, but there was nobody on the path. In so many ways, Bhagavan made us feel that He was always with us, until the conviction grew and became a part of our nature. Those were the days when we lived on the threshold of a new world, a world of ecstasy and joy. We were not conscious of what we were eating, of what we were doing. Time just rolled on noiselessly, unfelt and unperceived. The heaviest task seemed a trifle. We knew no fatigue. At home, the least bit of work seemed tiresome and made us grumble, while here we worked all day and were always ready for more. Once Bhagavan came to the kitchen and saw the cooking done and everything cleared, he wondered that the day's work was over so soon. No mere human hands were working here, Bhagavan. Good spirits helped us all the time, I said. He laughed. The greatest spirit, Arunachala, is here, towering over you. It is He who works, not you. Once a little deer found her way to Bhagavan and would not leave him. She would go with him up the hill and gambol around him, and he would play with her for hours. About a year later, she ran away into the jungle, and some people must have pelted her with stones, for she was found severely wounded with her legs broken. She was brought to the ashrama. Bhagavan kept her near him, dressed her wounds, and a doctor set her broken bones. One midnight, the deer crept into Bhagavan's lap, snuggled up to him, and died. The next day, Bhagavan told me that the deer had died. I said, "Some great soul came to you as a deer to gain liberation from your hands." Bhagavan said, "Yes, it must be so. When I was on the hill, a crow used to keep me company. He was a rishi in a crow's body. He would not eat from anybody's hand but mine. He also died. Once a Garuda, a white-breasted eagle, which is considered holy in India, flew into the hall and sat on the top of a cupboard near Bhagavan. After a while, it flew around him and disappeared. He is a Siddha, a saint endowed with supernatural powers, who came to pay me a visit," said Bhagavan most seriously. "A dog used to sleep next to Bhagavan, and there were two sparrows living at his side in the hall. Even when people tried to drive them away, they would come back. Once he noticed that the dog had been chased away. He remarked, 'Just because you were in the body of a human, you think you are a human being. And because he is in the body of a dog, you think him a dog. Why don't you think of him as a Mahatma and treat him as a great person? Why do you treat him like a dog?' The respect he showed to animals and birds was most striking. He really treated them as equals. They were served food first like some respected visitors, and if they happened to die in the ashrama, they would be given a decent burial and a memorial stone. The tombs of the deer, the crow and the cow Lakshmi can still be seen in the ashrama near the back gate. Who knows in how many different forms animal, human and divine beings visited this embodiment of the Almighty. We common and ignorant women knew only the basis of His presence and could not tear ourselves away from the beloved of all. So glorious He was. It has been 60 years, I think, since I came. The days I spent with Bhagavan or memorable days indeed. Somehow, in my old age, I am pulling on with Bhagavan in my heart and his name on my tongue.